speaker in this workshop here. I'm Noah from the University of Zurich in Switzerland. I'm very happy to be here and want to thank the organizers for the invitation. Actually, it's my second time. I'm in Georgia. Last summer, I've been here for also a little workshop, and I enjoyed this country and the food and the people here working hard in linguistics and corpus linguistics. And so today, I'd like to give you kind of an introduction into corpus linguistics and some important tools you can use to do corpus linguistics and also to build your own corpus. I think, as you probably agree, corpus linguistics is a very interesting method in linguistics to have to observe language use and to learn something about language usage. And to draw some conclusions from language use. What I'm planning to do today. We have two blocks, and the first block is kind of a presentation where I want to give you some insights into corpus linguistics. But I also have prepared a lot of activity works where you can really practically use corpora and use these tools I'm presenting. So here's the outline for today. First, we have to tackle a question like why do we do corpus linguistics? What's the sense of doing corpus linguistics? I want to introduce some basic analytical categories we use in corpus linguistics. I give you some insights in annotation techniques in natural language processing. So normally, we try to enhance the corpus with additional information, and we use machine techniques of natural language processing to do that. So, for example, part of speech tagging or lemmatization, and I want to say something about that. Then I have planned a hands-on part where you can try or where you can use a concordance software, the Open Corpus Workbench, and use a query language to ask your questions to a corpus. So we're using this Corpus Workbench. Then you have another activity where you can experiment with a software which with the name GraphCol to visualize collocation networks. Then I have a section about building corpora, because as you know, there are existing corpora you can use, but sometimes it is also necessary that you build your own corpus for a specific research question you have. And nowadays, where a lot of information is available digitally, it's very easy to build your own corpus with some material. I will give you some insights on that. Yeah, and then you see a lot of activities about dealing with XML, downloading web data, preparing a known XML schema, and CQP Web, which is a graphical interface to the concordance software Corpus Workbench. I have a website together with this course, and you find this website on my website bubenhofer.com, and if you here just enter /Gilisi2016, then you come to the course webpage where I have tutorials on all these activities. You have further information and really step-for-step tutorials where everything is described that you can do it on your own. Do you have your laptops here? Yeah? Some of you? Okay. Because in the second part, I think it's a good idea if you really work with your laptop and can reproduce what I'm presenting here on your own laptop. Okay, so this is the website to the course. So, but let's start with some more general information about corpus linguistics. Why should we do corpus linguistics? Well, as linguists, we're dealing with text, and we love to read texts, of course. Yeah? And sometimes if we read a text, then there's a passage where we think, oh, that's interesting. There's a word use which is not common, or you think, well, this is a formulation which is typical for a specific person or for a specific time period or whatever. And you draw your conclusions out of these observations. And if you read a lot of texts, then you have a lot of observations, and you try to build something like a rule about the use of a word or how some expressions are used in specific contexts, etc. That's what we're doing if we are reading texts. Now, Franco Moretti. He's a professor of literature studies, and he said that we have to do a pact with the devil. He says, what we really need is a little pact with the devil. We know how to read texts. Now, let's learn how not to read them. Distant reading, where distance, let me repeat it, is a condition of knowledge. It allows you to focus on units that are much smaller or much larger than the text, devices, themes, tropes, or genres and systems. So it's quite provocative that someone who do literature studies says, well, do not read these texts. What you should do is something different. Distant reading, as he names it. We would say, yeah, let's do corpus linguistics. Why is it so interesting to do corpus linguistics? And here I have a quotation from Hales, and he says, perhaps the single most important issue in affecting transformation is scale. In affecting transformation is scale. Digitized texts that can be searched, analyzed, and correlated by machine algorithms number in the hundreds of thousands, now with Google Books a million and more, limited only by ever-increasing processor speed and memory storage. Consequently, machine queries allow questions that would simply be impossible by hand calculation. So the situation that we have a lot of material, a lot of texts, allows us to pose new questions that we were not able to pose before. So instead of reading single texts, what we should do is have a lot of texts and to detect patterns of a phenomena in this massive amount of text. Yeah? If we have a lot of text, then it's easier to see patterns of a specific phenomenon because you can use statistical methods to see it. Yeah? You can count something, you can calculate the significance of an appearance of a specific phenomenon, and only if you have this massive amount of text, then you can see a pattern of language use. That's the general idea why we should do corpus linguistics. An important thing is that if we have this corpus linguistic approach to language, then we are, in the first step, we are really focused on language use. Yeah? What is language reality out there? Yeah? And this is an empirical approach to world. Now, for example, okay, this is the world. Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much. It's a world where bottles fall down. Okay. I think there must be a rule in this world which says that bottles fall down. Okay, bottles fall down. Let's see. Okay. this also falls down. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, follows bubbles and things like this, I don't know what it is, an adapter or something, cable, they fall down. Is that true for all cables? Perhaps what about this? Okay, it's also falling. Yeah. Okay. What about books? Oh, they're also falling. That's interesting. There must be a general rule which says that, well, bottles and books and cables, so things which start with C or B, they fall down. Okay? C and B, computers, starts also with C, so perhaps computers also fall down. Okay. Seems to be the case, yeah? Okay. What about sheet of papers? Oh, okay, they also fall down. Okay, that's interesting. Perhaps the rule is more general. Not only things which start with a B or a C fall down, perhaps all objects here in this room are falling down if I throw them. Okay, we should do some experiments outside of this building to see if bottles also fall down on the street. Yeah? So this approach is an empirical approach where I do experiments and have observations on something and I try to draw a conclusion out of it, yeah? Inductively. I have observations and then I try to formulate a rule about things in this world, how it behaves. Yeah? That's what we do in science. And of course we then can try to formulate very complex theories about something, and I can say, I think if I have a car, even cars, they will fall down from a bridge, for example. Yeah? And so my theory says that everything on this world here will fall down, not only in Georgia, also in Switzerland that will happen, and then I can do an experiment to see if this general rule, this theory I have, holds true if I do further experiments. Yeah? And that's what we are doing if we're doing corpus linguistics. We just have some observations and try to draw a conclusion out of that, of these observations, and to build a theory about that. And then, of course, if we have this theory, we can do further experiments to see if this theory is really correct and really holds true for other situations. Yeah. Okay, so as linguists, we're dealing with language and not with objects normally. If we have a problem or a question we want to deal with, then we can just sit in a comfortable chair and think about this problem and think about if an expression is correct or not. And this is one approach. But obviously, this is not the corpus linguistic approach. The corpus linguistic approach would be to just use data, empirical data, to see if this expression is used or not used, and in which situations it is used and not used. And these two positions are the armchair linguist, yeah, which is a very comfortable situation, that's true, and the corpus linguistic on the other hand, which tries to use empirical data to draw conclusions and build theories. Of course, in a normal linguistic life, you normally have both situations, we do both things. Sometimes we have to think about something also in the armchair and then do some experiments on the computer. These are these two positions I can have in the extremes in linguistic research. So, you want to work with the computer. Ah, you don't see a lot here, and a lot here is a bit dark. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the idea is with corpus linguistics that I can have new perspectives on language use. Here is a screenshot of a tool we made, which draws geocollocations. So what we did here is that we had big corpora of newspaper articles, and we've annotated all toponyms, so all mentions of locations in these newspaper articles, so Berlin, Georgia, Germany, whatever. And then we calculated which words appear significantly often together with these toponyms in this corpus. So you see that Berlin, you have perhaps a collocation like Brandenburger Tor, or Hauptstadt. In Switzerland, you have something like mountain chocolate, or I don't know, something like that. And then if you have these collocations to these toponyms, you can, of course, try to draw a map. And to locate all these collocations on a map to see how our view on the world is shaped by discourses. I can't present it live now because we had some technical problems. I needed my computer to do that, but you can also have a look on a first version of this tool on my website. There is a link, geocollocations, where you can see how it works. Okay, so what we have here is we have this massive amount of data, and we try to, rearrange this data or analyze this data in a way that we get a new view on the data, something we couldn't wouldn't have been able to do before. If you're just reading books, then it's very, very difficult to draw such a map on views on the world shaped by a discourse. But if you have this data, you can do that. So this is the nice thing, or the challenge, that we really have to try to do something new with the data. Okay, now if we do corpus linguistics, we normally have several steps we have to do to prepare our data. Obviously, the text data, which is around here, comes in very different formats and forms. Corpus linguistics often is very focused on written language, and of course language also appears probably more often as a spoken language. So language appears in different forms, and we have to try to to put it in a funnel to really build a text collection we can work with. Then normally we do some natural language processing, NLP. So what computational linguists do, they try to enhance the data with additional information using machine techniques. So perhaps in school you learned to categorize words in word classes by hand. We had always to draw colored lines underneath the words to say what is a verb and what is a noun, etc. And of course, if we do corpus linguistics and we have massive amounts of text, then we don't want to do that manually, but instead we use computer programs to do that. Other stuff, of course. And then, using these NLP techniques, we try to build a corpus which is enhanced with this linguistic information, annotations, and prepared in a form where we can access this data in a convenient way to ask our linguistic questions in this corpus and do some analysis. Okay, so let's now have a very tiny research question. For example, we're interested in this expression "war against terrorism." I don't know if you remember, after 9/11, I had the impression that the US really coined this expression war against terrorism, so not a fight not police actions against terrorism as a criminal act, but really a war. Yeah? So Bush said, well, we have we are in a war against terrorism after 9/11. So let's learn something about this expression, war against terrorism, and of course we can consult the corpus and just find expressions about war against terrorism, and we see, of course, there are expressions about war against terrorism in a corpus, in a newspaper corpus here, and we say, well, yeah, we found this expression, great. But this kind of naive approach to corpus. We want to ask a bit more interesting questions. So an advanced view on this problem would be that we have this massive amount of text and we want to see patterns of language use in the context of terrorism or in general in the context of press coverage or discourses about terrorism and draw patterns of language use about that out of the data. And then try to interpret these patterns. So to have hypothesis or a theory why this pattern appear in the data. What is the reason for these patterns? So one approach could be to just search for terrorism in a big corpus and see what other words appear together with terrorism. Here you have a standard keyword in context view of just this search on the word terrorism. And you see, yeah, you have Al-Qaeda terrorism, you have anti-terrorism, Asian terrorism, biggest terrorism, etc., etc. But it gets more interesting, of course, if you have frequencies, yeah, and can say about general tendencies of language use. Here, for example, you have word forms with the stem terror in a big corpus, and you see which word forms appear more often in the corpus. I hope you can see it. So the much often used word form is terrorism, and then the terrorists, so the persons doing terrorism, of course, are of interest. Also the plural form, and then you have derivations like terrorized, terrorists, etc. And you see, those are really big frequencies. Yeah? So we have here per million, so really big frequencies of these word uses. And you see also something interesting that of course there are or this language use or the use of this word is not distributed equally between different genres. So here you see that terror in this corpus, the contemporary American corpus, appears most often in spoken part of the corpus, and the least appearances we have in the fiction section of this corpus, and newspaper stands in the middle of those two genres. So there is variation in the use, and we have variation across genres, and we try to draw some conclusions why this is the case. Then you have also variation across time, of course. You see here in this corpus that terrorism in this corpus seems to be something of the years between 2000 and 24. Afterwards it gets down a bit, it decreases, the corpus here ends 2012, so you can imagine that it will increase again afterwards if we did another analysis on a more recent corpus. So here you have variation across time periods and can try to draw your conclusions why this is the case. Then you can ask yourself, well, okay, we have this expression war against terrorism. This word war, how it is used normally in language use, and you can calculate collocations, so to see what words appear normally together with war, and you see here that together with war significantly often appear these words here. So two for, of course, World War II, then the Gulf War, Vietnam War, post-Cold War, Civil War, etc., etc. And if we have war against terrorism, we see that, well, this is kind of a new use of this expression, because terrorism is a very vague expression, a vague concept, whereas these examples here are kind of more focused on specific events. You can of course also compare different collocation profiles to try to draw your conclusions out of it. I won't comment on that. We did some studies. The problem was I had to prepare some examples in English. Normally I'm working with German data, so this is a bit old-fashioned, because we did some experiments or some research on the election campaign in 28, Obama versus McCain. And remember these guys? Obama here looks still young. Has changed a bit. McCain here. Oh, okay. We need here some power. Do we have? Okay. So, at those time, we were interested in the rhetorics of these two guys in the election campaign. So, what are the differences when these two politicians speak, and what are the differences between these two election campaigns they had during the election campaign period. We had all the speeches Obama and McCain gave in public, and then we calculated, for example, collocations or the collocation networks to see what concepts are important in their speeches. And here you have a collocation network of McCain, so the Republican, we were interested in how he conceptualized Iraq. How does he conceptualize Iraq in his speeches? And you see here his collocation networks, where you see which words appear normally together with Iraq in his speeches. And you see, well, Iraq, then he said, well, we have to win this war, of course. He mentioned our and victory and the troops, defeat, the strategy which is needed to do it. Also Afghanistan. The war in Afghanistan, which of course is correlated with the war in Iraq, us and our, so our troops, honor, home, so the troops that have to brought home, etc. And if you compare now this collocation network to the collocation network of Obama, you see on one hand that there are other words, for example, so Obama focused on the end of the Iraq war, and also of costs, for example. So Obama mentioned the costs of this the war, and said, well, we have to end this war because of the costs, cost cut, and Here you have other expressions like dollar, spend, time, which also have or which also are indicators for this rhetorical strategy to focus on all the problems there are in the Iraq war. And you see also that the network is more complex compared to Obama, to McCain. So you can try to draw a conclusion that if Obama spoke on the Iraq war, he tried to kind of mention a lot of different problems and concepts together with this topic. Compared to McCain, McCain really tried to formulate very straightforward straightforward ideas how to end this war or how to have the victory. So you see different rhetorical strategies behind this data. So they both had different rhetorical strategies to talk about the war in Iraq. Nothing was that we just counted the use of pronouns in the speeches of McCain and Obama. And we saw, for example, that in the speeches of McCain, the typical pronouns he used were my, their, he, and I. Yeah. Obama's typical pronouns were we, you, us, yourself, and they. And that's quite striking that McCain really tried to present himself as a very strong leader and said, well, I am the solution for everything, so please elect me. Whereas Obama said, we have to do it together. Yeah. And you sure remember the expression, yes, we can. So this we was a very important pronoun in all the rhetorical strategies of Obama. And you see that if you just calculate the typical pronouns these two guys used in their speeches. You can also focus on expressions. Here we calculated what are the typical expressions McCain and Obama used in their speeches. They are ordered by a measure of significance, log likelihood ratio. And you see that Obama has expressions like, I think that we, John led me, and I think that thing going to be, I think important. Whereas McCain says something like, I will. So the point is, we need to have. So it seems to be that McCain was much more, yeah, he really wants to be a leader and which gives the impression that he knows what the solutions are and is very decisive, whereas Obama says, well, we have to think about this problem. There is not an easy solution to something. The world is more complex than it seems in the world of McCain, so to speak. So, much material where you can try to draw some conclusions, and then of course you have perhaps a theory about the different rhetorical strategies these politicians have, and then of course you can go back into the corpora and test your hypothesis you have with additional analysis and try to make your theory better draw your conclusions. Okay, so variation across speakers is the phenomenon we have here. Okay, I try to summarize a bit. Data mining and corpus linguistics are methods which are able to find patterns in big data. This is, I think, the main advantage of these methods. And of course, linguistically speaking, from the perspective of linguistics, we have to ask ourselves, what are the reasons for the existence of these patterns? And of course, there are a lot of reasons why these patterns appear in the data. One very obvious reason is grammar. Words in natural language are not distributed independently or randomly, but there is a grammatical structure. And so it is not a big surprise if in English you find that adjectives have the tendency to appear before nouns. Yeah? There are grammatical reasons for that. And if you're interested in grammar, then this might be interesting for you. Probably not this case here, that adjectives appearing before nouns, but other grammatical phenomena in the data. Other reasons are idiomaticity. So in English, for example, you have the idiom brush my teeth instead of clean my teeth. So you will find in big corpora more often the expression brush my teeth, or you find brush as a significant collocation together with teeth, whereas in other languages you find other expressions. So in French, it's laver, les dents, and not nettoyer or other possible words. So idiomaticity are another reason for patterns in language use. If you do a Google search, you can see that if you search for clean my on Google, then Google tries to do, or what it does really does, is a collocation analysis. It just analyzes the data to see what words appear normally after this expression, or what expressions do people normally search. And you see also if you enter brush, then brush my teeth seem to be a very common expression in English. Another reason is semantics, of course. Yeah. So Iraq, for example, in English corpora goes together with Iran, Baghdad, Mesopotamia, Kuwait, Islamic Republic, etc. Because these are concepts which appear together, because the world is such that these words often appear together because they have semantic relationship. So semantics is another reason for patterns. Then, of course, pragmatics. So if you greet each other, then you use specific expressions. How do you do? Hi, my name is. May I ask you a question, etc. So our pragmatics of language use is another reason for these patterns and produces these patterns. Then we also have social or cultural or historical settings which coin patterns in language. So if we have this presidential debate in 28 in the United States, then we have a specific discourse at those time during the election, and there were events in the world, historical events, and these events bring specific words together because we talk about these topics. So it's a historical setting which produces this pattern of language use. And this is interesting if you're interested in more cultural questions of language use, that if you see some patterns, of course, you can say, well, the appearance of this pattern must have something to do with a cultural situation or cultural differences or change in time or whatever. Another example is I will come back to that a bit later. The way how we write about climbing mountains. We built in Zurich a corpus about texts about mountaineering from the past 150 years. And there you see that how we talk about climbing in the mountains changes dramatically in time, and you can draw some conclusions how we conceptualize mountains differently, let's say 100 years before than today, how this changes and what that means for our culture, yeah, or for our society. How important the mountains are in our society, what projections we have on the mountains, if the mountains are a sign of independence, for example, which is the case in Switzerland, or if the mountains are just a sign for recreation and vacation and sports. Okay, so this was the first part where I tried to say why we should do corpus linguistics, and I want now to introduce some basic analytical categories. I don't know if there are any questions so far or comments on what I've told you. I really appreciate if you have, you can anytime you can raise any question if something is not clear. But I think in the first part we had really some basic basics about corpus linguistics, and I guess you probably all agree with the advantages of corpus linguistic approaches and the reasons why we should do that. At least this is the reason why you're here and want to learn something about corpus linguistics. Okay, just to manage the time, so we have until 12. Until 12, yeah. Okay, so we have a bit more than a half an hour until the break. Okay, I've already talked about some basic categories we use in analyzing language data, and a very important principle is our collocations. I have here a collocation network, and I just want to ask you if you can read that, if you have an idea. Which word stands here in the middle of this graph? Any ideas? So we have here feeling, express, much, truly, fall, short, true, choice, hate, never, story,
love.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Why love? Why did you come to solution love? Why were you able to find a solution? What did you do? Love story. Yeah, so you read, what you actually did was reading words appearing, normally appearing together with love in texts. Yeah, and if you, because if you, that you know something about language use and English, you get the idea. Yeah, words like feeling and story and true and fall and truly, they often appear with love. Yeah? So you have an idea of language use in your heads, and you have here the data and see typical expressions. So love story, we are falling in love, we have the feeling to be in love, we express our love. We have true love or not true love, yeah. We will never love again, yeah. Sometimes. We love each other, we care about love, we love a boy, yeah, sometimes, or we love a girl. I don't know if the girl appears here, so we love a wife. Okay, so what we have here is the semantic profile of love, and this is just statistics. Yeah, all we did here was calculating the words appearing in a big corpus significantly often together with love, and the corpus here this is a nice corpus about love stories. So students were here writing their love stories and discussing their love stories in the web. And it's a little corpus compiled from this data where you can see how people talk about love in English. So those are collocations. And collocations are very important mean to learn something about the semantic profile of a word. You will have later a presentation by Stefania Ptashnik, which is a specialist in working with corpus data to write, to do lexicography. And she will say much more about the use of collocations to learn something about semantics. How do we calculate collocations? I don't give you a mathematical equation at the moment, just to give you the general idea what we do if we calculate collocations. So the question is, if we do that, which words appear frequently in the neighborhood of our keyword? So our keyword is love, and we want to know which words appear frequently in the neighborhood of love. What we do is we list then all words appearing in a defined window around the keyword. So we have all the matches, all the matches of all the occurrences of love in a big corpus, and we say, well, we consider a window of let's say 5 words to the left and to the right, and we're interested in all the words appearing in this window in the corpus, in all the occurrences of love in the corpus. We count these frequencies of all the words appearing in this window, and then If you would just have a list of the most frequent words appearing together with love, that would be not of big interest, because the most frequent words are words which appear together with love just because of grammatical structure. Yeah. So, for example, normally in English you have the definite article the as the